Hot. Bring the heat.
And now, your host, Pat Rulo.
Welcome to Speak Up Talk Radio. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo, where each week I share talk-worthy topics that seldom see the light of day. As a leader in the patient safety world, I now extend my advocacy to include what many consider to be fringe topics. Topics that affect our health, our lives, our futures, and our sanity. So enjoy the next few minutes as I entice you to join me to become the voice for informed choice. Most often on this program, I share health and healthcare-related news along with other random insanity that affects our lives. But today, I'd like to share a story of hope, faith, and love. As you know, I interview authors of all genres for our online radio network, speakuptalkradio.com. And you've heard me talk about some of the different authors from time to time. Today's special program highlights the power of prayer, belief, and hope. It is an excerpt from a longer interview that you can listen to after the show if you like. Just visit speakuptalkradio.com. I hope it inspires you to stay steadfast in your life's pursuits. Right now, I have two guests to share with you, a husband and wife team, Gail and Dave Hickman from Knoxville, Tennessee. Gail felt the call to write the true life story of a miraculous event that her husband experienced in 1955 when at age 14, while hunting with his grandfather, he found an abandoned baby in the woods of Indiana. His decades-long search to locate her again resulted in their emotional reunion in 2014, which was broadcast worldwide on the CBS This Morning show. Additionally, CBS posted the video on YouTube and the story of their reunion went viral, as they say, and soon Gail and her husband were receiving responses from individuals from all over the world expressing interest in knowing more about this decades-long search, the reunion, and their personal life. It took 2 years to write the book titled And the Angel Cried, The Miraculous Story of an Abandoned Baby in 1955. Looking back on the events that occurred during the search for baby Roseanne was an extremely emotional time in their lives. The agony of encountering one brick wall after another, one door closing, another opening, and increasing suspicion of a cover-up in Dave's hometown. Anyone who values life will cherish this story. Those who believe or want to believe in divine intervention will be brought to their knees. And I am so looking forward to hearing this incredible story directly from both of them. So welcome to the network, Gail and Dave.
Thank you, Pat.
Thank you, Pat.
Oh, what a pleasure. And thank you for sending me a copy of the book. I just sat there and wept through the entire time. All right, well, let's talk about the book and the angel cry. This is an incredible true story, as I said, of this event that happened in 1955 when, Dave, you were 14 years old and found an abandoned infant in the woods. Give us just a brief retelling of that story, just enough to entice folks to get a copy of your book so they can find out the entire story.
Okay, that was a very amazing day. That day, that was Thursday, September 22nd, 1955. My grandfather called me up about 10 o'clock in the morning. It had rained all night the night before, and the temperature was in about 50 degrees. My grandfather picked me up, and we went to the woods. And we had never been to that woods before, which was very strange to me because we had always hunted the same place on the farm. We had five or six different locations. But anyway, we hunted all day. We came out of the woods about 6 o'clock in the evening, and we were dressing out our game and standing by the car, and something got my attention, and I can't really explain what it was that got my attention as to a sound or tapping on a shoulder or whatever it was. But anyway, I knew I had to find out what was going on. I knew something was wrong. So I started walking along the fence. I was on the roadside of the fence, and I was in mode, In the book, we estimated that I walked about 70 yards, 210 feet. But anyway, we measured it out this time, and actually I walked a little bit over the length of the football field. I walked about 120 yards, and I came to a fence post, and I felt I have to climb up the fence post and go into the woods. I had to stop right there. I climbed up the fence post, and on the other side of the fence, the weeds were very deep, a lot of limbs down, and I looked to find a safe place to sit down, and that's where the baby was lying. The baby was wrapped in just a dirty towel. Her umbilical cord had not been tied.
Hmm.
She was cut on the barbed wire fence. Her face, arm, and side was cut open. She was bleeding, and she was covered with maggots. Oh. If I had stopped at the fence post before or the fence post afterwards, she would still be there. You couldn't see her from those positions. I called my grandfather, and we went and got help.
Wow. Just talk about being at the right place at the right time, that you were supposed to be there. That just is not an accident.
No, I can't help but to feel that I was led to that baby.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
120 yards, she could not make a sound. She couldn't cry out. Her lips, hands, and feet were blue. And later on, I was informed by the sheriff that she had been in the woods overnight, anywhere for possibly as much as 24 hours in that 50-degree weather, the rain. There's animals in that woods, fox and coyotes. They didn't get to her, and I was led to her. It had to be that way.
Yes, it obviously had to be that way. What a story and what an experience for a little child as yourself. I mean, a little 14-year-old. And then you carried that with you for the next 58 years. You searched and searched for her. And I just found it so interesting that it seemed like nobody was really working with you or trying to help. I'm sure it felt that way.
A couple of weeks after I found her, I'd ride to the hospital on my bicycle. So from where I live, it was probably about 5 miles away. And I'd go into the hospital and I'd inquire about her. And they wouldn't tell me anything. There were just a few small newspaper articles that came out. And there was not really a lot of information in them. So later on, as we kept searching, it was like a brick wall running into. No one would tell us anything. About 3 months after I found her, I was in class. I was in junior high school, and my teacher came up to me, and she said, "Dave, you have to go to the principal's office." And here I am, a 14-year-old boy, scared to death. I figured they caught me doing something. Of course, anyway, I walked grudgingly to the principal's office, and there were two nurses there, and they on their own brought the baby to me to say goodbye to. They told me that she was being adopted. They let me hold her, and I got to kiss her goodbye.
Wow.
And then from that moment on, they weren't even supposed to bring her to me.
Mm-hmm.
But they obviously knew how I felt, that I was very concerned that she even lived and couldn't find out any information. So anyway, I got to kiss her goodbye. And from that point on, then we couldn't find out anything. And I still see the image of that baby in the woods. And that's what drove me to find out what kind of life she had or even if she lived.
Yeah, I think anyone in your position would feel the same way. I mean, you saved this little child, and to be denied any kind of information, and I understand privacy, and I don't even know if they had HIPAA laws back then, but, you know, just the whole private aspect of it. But still, just to let you know that, yes, she's fine, she's okay. And I was wondering about how some of these circumstances might have been different had it been today. I bet the nurses would never have come to school with this baby had it been, you know, 2017.
I question that, too.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was very, very honored that they did what they did.
Yes.
And I don't know if that would happen today either.
Mm-hmm.
Things like this happen. Of course, I can never understand, never justify in my mind anybody doing what they did.
Yes. No, that's beyond what any reasonable person could even fathom. I also wonder, as I was reading the book, Was the secrecy due to privacy issues, or was there some connection somewhere where someone was just withholding this information? I mean, did someone ever know who did this? And then the whole thing with the pink ribbon, that you had tied the pink ribbon on the fence and the next day it was gone. So it seems like somebody was still looking and checking. And
of course, this is attempted murder. There's no question about it.
Yes.
There was always a lot of speculation and a lot of talk that the baby's mother was probably a teenage girl at the time.
Right, that's what I thought.
And her parents were thought to be probably very influential in that area. We don't know, of course, if the mother threw the baby over the fence into the woods. We don't know if it was the brother, the boyfriend, or anything at this point. But one thing happened just before the reunion, and this is not in the book. I had an attorney call me up here in Tennessee, and the newspapers already had the information about the reunion. Anyway, he called me and he said, "Dave, I'm so-and-so, and I'm an attorney, and I wanted to ask you, do you think you can really find that location where you found that baby?" Well, obviously, that's something that you cannot erase from your mind. So when he said he was an attorney, I was very concerned about answering his question. But anyway, he asked me, or he told me, that he was going to send me plot plans of the area. And he wanted me to mark on those plans where I found a baby. He sent the plot plans, and I did not mark on them, and I did not return them to him. But at the reunion, he had invited himself, and he made sure that whenever anybody was taking a picture of me and the lady, Ellen, that he was in the picture.
Whoa.
Now, an interesting thing about that, at the time that I found the baby, 1955, he would have probably been about 18 and 19 and just going to college.
Interesting.
You know, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But it was interesting that this took place the way it did.
And did he ever say who hired him, or he was just supposedly had a self-interest in this? I mean, that would have been interesting to find out.
Never any kind of explanation.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't really press too much. Mm-hmm. I felt that, you know, it's a terrible thing what Ellen is going through. She's a lovely lady. It was really wonderful to meet her, but for her to have to live with such a knowing that she was thrown away, that it's up to her to pursue this type of thing.
Mm-hmm. No, I get that. I get that. Yes, and how difficult a life that must be for her. I mean, happy that she's alive, but always questioning what and why and who, and that would be a very difficult way to live a life. And I understand that you had a difficult life as well, trying to figure this out, and it was always haunting you. And once you got married and you told this story to your wife, Gail, did you ever decide prior to meeting this little baby in person a few years ago, did you ever think about writing about this prior to that?
No. We were very concerned. I felt like I had to find out about her. I just had to find out if she was alive. I wanted to know what kind of life she had. We tried to be very careful in our search, and I didn't want to be the one to inform her.
Right.
So my search and my wife's search together was to find out mainly if she was alive and what kind of life she had, and I really would not have needed anything else.
Mm-hmm. So once you did find her, just tell us about the process of feeling that relief and then why you decided to put this in a book form.
After the reunion, we had inquiries. The story in the newspaper went to USA Today. It went to all over the Internet and still is today. And we've had inquiries from people all over the world. And this story is really a testimony to God's protection, God's guidance, and God's grace. And by that, what I mean, God's protection. That infant baby, 2 to 5 days old, cut up by the barbed wire fence, lying in the cold rain for almost 24 hours, animals in the woods that would have loved to have found her, bleeding, cut, like I said, and covered with maggots, she survived. Yeah. 6.5 pounds.
Wow.
She had to be protected.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I referred to God's guidance, I was a 14-year-old boy, and I walked this distance along the fence, and I had to stop at that fence post and climb that fence post. And that's where she was lying. If I had stopped anyplace else, she would still be there. And then God's grace is He reunited her with me so I could find out what kind of life she had. And that was a wonderful, wonderful day.
I bet. I saw the pictures and everything on your website. And yes, it looked like it was just such a happy, happy reunion. And it's just so interesting how your life was so intertwined with this other person's. And it just seems so random, and yet it really isn't.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So, Gail, tell us about the book writing process, because this, I'm sure you had heard this story since you had met Dave, and that had to have been really an emotional yet cathartic adventure for the two of you together, for him to tell you about this and for you to put this in book form. So let's just talk about how that process occurred.
The reunion was over. People were just talking again about how this needs to be a book. I'd never written a book before, but maybe I could. I didn't know how to start. And you know the saying, you don't know what you don't know. So I started researching the internet to find out how to get started writing a story. One of the things I came across was an article by Karen Kingsbury, and it was her 10 tips for aspiring authors. Now, she's a number one New York best-selling author. She lives right here in Tennessee. But she had 10 things on her list, two of them, the first and the second. Her first one was keep writing. It says, if God has given you a book to write, or if you feel He has placed a story on your heart that needs to be told, write, write, write. The tenth thing that she said was pray. Nothing written or done for God will happen without your diligent prayer. A lot of things in between also to help. But those were the two things I needed to hear, the first and the last. I should have stopped right there and started writing the story. But I kept searching the internet for more information, and the more I read, the more scared I became, the more frozen my mind became, and the more negative I became about my own ability, you know, could I even do this story, you know. But the message needed to be heard. So I started the writing actually on June 4th of 2014. At first, when I wrote the book, I tried to work Dave's story and Ellen's story in together, to mingle it. And it just it didn't work. The words weren't coming easily to me, and it just didn't seem like a good flow. So again, I kind of started doubting myself again. And at that point, we started trying to use some other authors, ghostwriters and columnists, to maybe do the book. But what we got back was more their story and not us. It just wasn't the emotional and uplifting and inspirational story that we knew this one was. So, again, David came up to me and said, you need to write the story. And he was right, because I was right by his side for decades. It was in my heart. The story was in my soul. This time it felt right. And I felt that God's grace would guide us on this venture. Once I made that decision, I knew I was going to stick with it. And I went to the computer. My hands would not keep up with the words. You know, they just kept flooding. But 58 years of memories for Dave and 48 for me. And I prayed every morning for the story. I gave thanks every night for the words that God provided to me. It was published on March 23rd, 2016, being represented all over the world. It's touching people all over the world.
Absolutely, absolutely. You just had divine intervention at every turn, and this just was a journey that was meant to be for all of you, apparently. And I think it's a message of hope and faith and belief. And I'm so happy that this has a happy ending, that you were able to be reunited and be able to get this message out. And there's more to know. And I don't want to tell any more of the story, just because I want folks to get a copy of the book. But thank you so much for sharing this today. So give us your website so we can send folks to find more information.
Our website is theangelcried.com. The book is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, iBook, through our publisher. I hope that people, when they come to the website, when they read about the story, that they're touched with the story, and if they are, that they share with their friends and with their family. We just want the message of God's miracles to reach out as far into the world as possible, because they're every day. If we just stop and pay attention, be quiet, and act on them and recognize them, they're there.
Right. There's always hope, and obviously, Dave, you are a messenger to that message as well, to say that there is always hope, that you held that out for all these years. I want to thank you both from the bottom of my heart for spending some time with us today to share this beautiful story, and God bless both of you. Thank you.
God bless you.
God bless you, Pat. Wonderful talking with you.
Wow, what a story, right? I know there's a lesson in it, actually many lessons. God works in mysterious ways, and all we have to do is to be open to it, be persistent, patient, loving, to never give up, to carry faith with us each and every day. I hope you share today's program with others, and you can hear the entire interview at the website speakuptalkradio.com. That is speakuptalkradio.com. And speaking of authors, I recently had the pleasure to interview Tracy Andraghetti, a USA Today best-selling author of the Frankie Amato Mysteries and the Danger Cove Hair Salon Mysteries. If you love cocktails, color, and crime with an Italian twist, who wouldn't? You'll love her books with delicious titles such as Limoncello Yellow, Prosecco Pink, Amber Amaretto, or A Poison Manicure and Peach Liqueur. You can check out all of her titles at the website TracyAndraghetti.com. Tracy, it's T-R-A-C-I. Andraghetti is A-N-D-R-I-G-H-E. TTI, TracyAndraghetti.com. If you love mysteries, you'll love Tracy. That's TracyAndraghetti.com.
Hi, this is Jana Panaritis, host of the AgeWise podcast, where we hear from the healthcare system's hidden workforce, the millions of family caregivers whose stories of devotion and courage will shock and inspire you. Join me as we shake up the conversation on care, and know you're not alone. Listen to a brand new episode every week at speakuptalkradio.com. To learn more about the show, visit the AgeWise website. That's AgeWYZ.com.
Hi there, I'm Gina Murphy Darling, the voice of Mrs. Green on the airwaves, and I would love for you to become a part of my world. We love to educate, inspire, and engage people about things like the faceless villain of climate change and lots of other topics that I know will interest you. Our guests will fill you up with hope, possibility, and ways that you can make a difference in your everyday life, and that will make a difference for this great planet of ours. Please visit my website at mrsgreensworld.com to learn more and to become a part of our world.
Well, you've heard me talk about cats in the past. For some reason, I have 13 of them, 13 rescue cats that we now take care of, and I love each and every one of them, and actually have learned how to speak cat lately. So I have a question for you. Do you work long hours and leave bored cats at home? Or are you planning a business trip or a vacation? Well, don't leave your cats alone to fend for themselves. I say that's not polite and it's not safe. I am opening up, brand new, grand opening. It's called Cats Inn on the Chagrin. And on the Chagrin, I mean on the Chagrin River. Cats Inn on the Chagrin. It's a cage-free boutique overnight boarding or a daycare option for working or traveling cat owners. That's right, no one is ever caged. We don't even have any. It's located in Chardon, Ohio, and I personally offer personal and expert care 24/7. Your cats will have their own non-shared suite, a spacious home away from home with plenty of natural light, love, and entertainment. And they will not come in contact with other cats. This will absolutely be safe and secure at all times. It's a calm, peaceful, friendly, and meticulously clean environment. Because I do have extra space, I have designated this specifically for those who either work a lot and hate to leave their cat alone every single day. This might be a great drop-in place, maybe once a week, twice a week, just so your cat gets some exposure to a human being during the day who has the time to play and give them a stimulating environment. Or if you're going out of town, whether it's a business trip or holidays coming along, many people leave their cats home alone, open the toilet bowl, throw a bunch of food all over the place, and hope for the best. Well, that's not the right way to take care of your cat. So check out Cats Inn on the Chagrin. It's all spelled out. K Cats Inn, and that's I-N-N, like a hotel, Cats Inn on the Chagrin, C-H-A-G-R-I-N, catsinonthechagrin.com. You can also find a link at my 11catsradio.com website. Or if you're interested to talk more about it and explore this option for you and your cat, give me a call, 440-725-5462. That is 440-725-5462. Cats Inn on the Chagrin.com. It's the boarding and daycare choice your cat would ask for if your cat could talk. All right, we are out of time. Please come back next week where I will have more goodies to share with you. Same time, same place, but you know me, never the same information. Until then, I hope you have a healthy and a happy week. I am Pat Rulo, and I am the voice for informed choice.